So when we learned about this Tennessee case of a 7-year-old Russian adoptive child being sent back to Russia, causing Russia to at least threaten to suspend U.S. adoptions of Russian children, the adoptive mom claimed the boy was violent and mentally unstable, we wanted to know more about this idea of a parent sending a child back. So we initiated a conversation on our website that was going on anyway. We want to jump right into the middle of this. Kate in Brooklyn wrote to Facebook at thetakeaway.org, "Kids aren't commodities. You can't just take one back because he or she doesn't match your handbag or lifestyle." And responding to the idea of accusations that the adoptive child was violent or mentally unstable, Mary from Florida posted, "I think there should be a time of adjustment before the adoption is final, maybe 6 months to a year. Sometimes information is not disclosed on children. And in those cases, one should not be stuck with a problem you knew nothing about." Lisa Belkin joins us, Takeaway contributor and Motherload blogger for our partner, The New York Times. She's been exploring this topic on her blog. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
So Orlando Modino is with us. He's going to talk about this topic from the perspective of an adoptive child who actually gets this kind of treatment or a sense of rejection from adoptive parents. Good morning, Orlando.
Good morning.
Lisa Belkin, let me just begin with you. How complicated is this issue of returning an adopted child, and how are parents coming down on the Motherload side?
Well, on Motherload, they're outraged, and in all directions. There are people writing in that are outraged that you would treat a child like a commodity. There are people writing in outraged at a system that treats children in such a way that they can become so damaged in the first place. And then we heard from Orlando, who has a very unique perspective, one that we haven't heard a lot in this conversation, which is the child himself, someone who was returned.
Well, Orlando, did you feel like a commodity in the treatment of your adoptive parents, or did you understand somehow that this was a difficult situation that wasn't going to work out?
I felt like it was totally a commodity, again, because I was conscious I was almost 10 years old, and because I didn't understand what was going on. It was a disruption. It was a traumatic experience that I had no control or understanding of what was going on.
Wow.
And again, at my age, I was completely in total shock. It was a total shock to my system. It was like ripping me apart, splitting me apart psychologically, emotionally, in every direction.
Well, let's get some of the details. You came from what country?
Colombia.
Right.
Bogota, Colombia.
And you were age 10, and your first set of adoptive parents was where in the United States?
In upstate New York.
Upstate New York.
In upstate New York, in a little town called Woodstock, New York.
And what happened? I mean, how did things go from bad to worse?
Well, first of all, like in a lot of these cases, my parents were sort of unaware of where I was emotionally, that this might be a traumatic experience for the child. So they just assumed that I would be I would adjust, quote unquote, well, and that I would just be happy that someone wanted me. I would just, be in total awe that someone's rescuing me. And there would be no problems without any consideration to my culture, identity. First of all, they changed my name right away before I even left the country. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't even given a choice. My name was changed. I was forced to eat new food I was unaccustomed to, new language, new landscape. Everything was completely different. People who I didn't know, this new family.
I have to say, the culture shock between Bogota, Colombia and Woodstock, New York, I know both places. I mean, that is extraordinary. But do you remember the moment when that first set of adoptive parents said, "We're done here. You're out of here, Orlando"?
Yes, I do. I remember them. They came from a Protestant culture, very cold people, extremely cold. They were not genuine, not warm. They didn't speak any Spanish, not a word of Spanish, and I spoke no English. So we couldn't communicate. There was no sense of attachment. I didn't know who these people were. I didn't know what they wanted. And so it was just very It was a disruption. I didn't know what to do or say. I just wanted to get away from these people. I did not want to live with them.
You've now settled in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I can certainly tell that your English is spectacular, probably a lot better than your adoptive parents' Spanish is at this point. Lisa Belkin, before we go back to Orlando there, how much of an object lesson is this for what can go wrong in an international adoption?
If there's any silver lining here, it's the fact that it's shining a spotlight on something that happens, that every adoption is not smooth, that children do have problems that some parents either are not told about or do not want to recognize or do not become obvious until the child is here. And I am hoping that the result of this is that adoptive families will now get more help if they cry for it. And the mother in Tennessee does not appear to have cried for it. But families who do say there's not necessarily all the resources out there that there might be when they need help.
Indeed. Lisa Belkin, takeaway contributor and Motherload blogger for our partner, mm-hmm. The New York Times. Orlando Modino, before we go, if you had to do it over again, if you had to go back, is there any sort of one thing that could have made things work out much, much better, even including not being adopted in the first place?
I would begin with what you just said, not being adopted. When you're an older child, it's almost impossible. I think there are so many side effects. Some are worse than others, but there are side effects regardless. There's no such thing as an easy adjustment when you're an older child, and particularly an older adopted international child. Again, most people would never understand what it's like from an adoptee's point of view. I would ban all older international adoptees if I could.
Wow.
All of them.
Well, we're seeing it through your eyes out there in San Francisco. Are you happy at home in San Francisco these days, at least?
I'm still healing. Again, it's a rupture that occurred in my life, and I'm still healing, so it's still a process. It's a process that will take probably the rest of my life, but I'm healing.
All right. Well, we're seeing it through your eyes, and we really thank you for that. Orlando Modino, as a child, was abandoned by two different sets of adoptive parents. We're seeing this international adoption story through the eyes of a child. Orlando, thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the time.
The conversation continues online with you as it always does. Patty posts to Facebook, there are numerous cases where children are adopted and their health hasn't been fully disclosed, the main issue being attachment disorder. I know two adoptive families who've adopted children with attachment disorder, and it comes close to destroying their families. These were amazingly loving, wonderful, admirable parents, and it broke their hearts that they could not be that to these children. If you have a story, give it to us at thetakeaway.org or on our Facebook page. You can also call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. This is clearly the kind of story that everyone has a different opinion
on. Big conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us your opinion on that. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.